character as we study the prayers of God's people. And last week we tried to show three cases of Moses interceding in behalf of the people of God when the people of God were stiff-necked and stubborn, and God had the idea of just consuming them. Moses made intercession for them. When they, in their rebellion, made an idol for themselves, and God then was ready to make a nation out of Moses and was not intending to go up with the people, lest they be consumed by His holiness. Moses made intercession again, and that involved a revelation of the nature of God, which is very, very central to the whole biblical record. And then when Moses got overwhelmed by the grumbling of the people and the responsibility that was on him, then Moses prayed for himself by nature of a complaint. And that aspect of prayer in a servant of God is as practical as the other two examples were. And we've tried to make that point. Alan made an observation to me after class last Wednesday night that I thought was very important. And I want to share with you an observation he made. You know, as we studied Moses' intercessory prayers, we tried to show not only the petition or request that Moses made in behalf of the people, but the arguments, the reasons that he offered to the Lord, why that request was appropriate and why it should be answered. And Alan's observation was that's the way we understand what Jesus does for us in heaven as He makes intercession for us. That all the things Moses was doing in these prayers for God's people are the things that Christ does to make intercession for us, except where Moses reasoned from God's deliverance of Israel from Egypt, Christ reasons on the basis of God's deliverance of us from sin and death. And where Moses reasoned from the way God revealed His heart and His character, His glory to Moses, Christ reasons based on what He has shown us of God's glory in His own work and His own ministry. So tonight, if you'll have your Bible open to Numbers chapter 14, I want to show, if we can, three more parts of this topic here that I think are especially important. Before I forget it, I want to mention to you the families that we have, or the individuals that we have right now who were mentioned in our prayer earlier. We have several of our folks who are with some of those folks tonight, especially with Tim. And there have been different, you know, two of the people mentioned don't have family members here. And so our folks have been attending to those people, and we're so grateful for the time and the energy and the concern and compassion demonstrated in times like that. I saw Wayne today, Wayne Harmon, and Wayne is having a great deal of pain, but when Wayne fell, he had been to pick up a birthday cake for a 105-year-old lady that he visits in a nursing center over there. He got a cake with five candles on it, and he was going to tell her that she'd just have to assume the first 100. And Wayne told me, I want to tell you how things have gone for me, said I. I had been to Walmart, I went in the house, and then I came back out, and then I fell. And when I couldn't get up, I punched my alert button that I have, and they put me on hold, he said. So that was, I don't know if he was kidding or not, that's what he said. I guess that would indicate a bad start to a week, wouldn't it? Bless his heart. Y'all keep him in your prayers. Numbers 14 now. In this case, Moses' prayer for intercession, of intercession for Israel, draws on some of the experiences of the, especially the first two we mentioned. This is a case, another of a case, where the people grumbled, but in this situation, it is more vivid and more unfortunate, I would say. Remember, God sent the, had them to send 12 spies to the, to see if this land of promise was not a land flowing with milk and honey. And the spies came back to report. You guys remember what they said? All right. Did they say, that's the sorriest country we've ever seen? Who would want to go there? They didn't say that, did they? Ruth said the way it came out, I think. But remember, they came back, it is indeed. Remember, they come back carrying these clusters of grapes and all that. That took two guys and a stick between them to do that. It is indeed a land flowing with milk and honey, but remember what they said there were up there? There are giants up there. We're like grasshoppers in that in their sight. We can't do it. So what was the impact of that report? The people what? All right, that's two guys. That's two guys, Joshua and Caleb. But the rest of the people began to grumble. And what they said is, you know, I wish we had died in the land of Egypt as slaves instead of talking about this land flowing with milk and honey. My paraphrase, they said in verse 4 of this chapter, let's appoint a leader and go back to Egypt. And remember, Moses and Aaron fall on their faces, and Joshua and Caleb tear their garments and so on and tried to plead with the people. But the people got ready to stone them for even suggesting that they could go up and take the land. And so at verse 11 of the chapter, the Lord says to Moses, how long? And by the way, it's thought-provoking to me that it's not only people who can ask the how long questions. There are a lot of cases in the Bible where people of God get discouraged and ask how long. Revelation has a great example of how long. But God can ask how long questions too. How long will this people spurn me? This is the New American Standard Version. How long will they not believe in me despite all the signs which I have performed in their midst? I'll smite them with pestilence and dispossess them, and I'll make you, Moses, into a nation greater than mightier than they. Now remember, Moses is as discouraged and disappointed with the people as God is. And Moses is offered an opportunity to have a nation made out of himself. But what does he do? He prays for them. And here's the prayer in verses 13 and following. And notice in verses 13 through 16, Moses begins to making the argument to God, if you do that, your name will be dishonored. If you do that, it is your reputation which will suffer. And look what he says, verse 13. Moses said to the Lord, Then the Egyptians will hear of it, for by your strength you brought up this people from their midst, and they'll tell it to the inhabitants of this land. They've heard that you, O Lord, are in the midst of this people, for you, O Lord, are seen eye to eye while your cloud stands over them, and you go before them in a pillar of cloud by day and in a pillar of fire by night. Now, if you slay this people as one man, then the nations who've heard of your fame will say, because the Lord could not bring this people into the land which he promised them by oath, therefore he slaughtered them in the wilderness. Now, notice the thought in this prayer, and notice how the prayer is attached to the reality of the moment. What were the people saying? We can't. God can't give us the land. What does Moses say? If you destroy them, the nations will say, you couldn't. Now, think of the reasoning of Moses in the situation here. His point is, Lord, if you do that, you'll have not just this people who thought you couldn't, but you'll have the nations who think you couldn't. Now, if all of our prayers were as attached to the reality of the moment and as connected to the situation as that when we make intercession, then you could see this. Now, how would this be related to the model prayer? When Jesus said, we say, our Father in heaven. No, not there. Not yet. Hallowed be your name. Let your name be kept holy. Isn't that what Moses is reasoning here? He's wanting God's reputation to be upheld. Now, verse 17, he makes three requests. In my mind, I outline it this way at least. One, based on the power God has declared. Second, based on the character God has revealed. And third, based on the forgiveness that God's already been practicing. Look at it, verse 17. But now I pray, and hear the request. Here's a different course. But now I pray, let the power of the Lord be great, just as you have declared. In other words, show that you can. Second, and this takes us back, remember, to Exodus 34, verses 6 and 7, when God showed His glory to Moses. Here's what God, here's the Lord is slow to anger and abundant, and the New American Standard uses the word loving kindness. King James uses the word mercy. The ESV translates this covenant word, steadfast love. Since you're abundant in that covenant love, forgiving iniquity and transgression, but he will by no means clear the guilty. There's the justice. Visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generation, there are the real life consequences. And what Moses is saying, based on who you are, pardon, I pray, the iniquity of the people. Now, in this request, he's asking God to show his power and then to simply act in keeping with who he is. He's not asking God to set aside reality, but to show who he is and to conduct himself as he has, according to who he is and not according to who the people are. Does that make sense? That's the petition of prayer. And then third, Pardon, I pray, the iniquity of this people, according to the greatness of your loving kindness, your steadfast love, just as you have forgiven this people from Egypt even till now. How many times had they grumbled, murmured, complained? God will say later on, these 10 times, and I take that to mean all the time. And so God, what Moses is saying is, please go on treating us with the mercy you have been showing all along anyway. And what a prayer that is. This reflects the thought of someone who cares about the people, but even more so values the reputation of God, and who asks God, based on recognition of God's power and God's character and God's work already done. So when you and I pray, when we make intercession, maybe there is a model for us here. Think of what Alan's point that I mentioned a while ago. If I were asking you to pray for me, or if we together were praying for God's people, we might pray that the glory of the Lord Jesus Christ be upheld in God's people today, the way it was upheld at the tomb. And we might ask that God deal with Christ's people in the world today based on that power that raised up His Son. And in view of the atoning blood which established the new covenant and which cleanses, has the power to cleanse the conscience from dead works. And we might mention, we might confess that God has had to show that kind of mercy toward us over and over again. And we might thank Him for it and ask Him to treat us according to that even now. And there are many occasions, of course, when that needs to be, that kind of prayer needs to be engaged in. Now, God answers the prayer not by ignoring the fault of the people, but by allowing what they have said about themselves to come true. They said, our bodies will fall in this wilderness. So what happened to them? All of them 20 years old and upward. Yeah, over the next 38 years. And yet God answered Moses' prayer because there were still all these people 20 and younger who He takes into the land, and He blesses them. He keeps His promise. He shows them mercy according to what Moses had asked here in this passage. So the prayer is not simply an unrealistic make-believe answer of, oh, it's okay, never mind that my wrath was stirred. But it is still, God does demonstrate His steadfast love, His loving kindness. Now, that's the first glimpse of this. So let's think about what happens with Moses in this 38 years in between. Now, you and I know that he maintains his vigor, he leads the people and all of that. In chapter 21, well, look over here. Let me see if I can unfold the story just a little bit here. Moses, who has had to intercede for them, now has to lead them while a generation dies off. That's no easy job, friends, if you think about what that would be like. And he has to try to get them to be faithful to God. So Numbers illustrates the journey as it begins to take place. In chapter 16, there's the rebellion of Korah and Dathan and Abiram, who accuse Moses and Aaron of taking too much on themselves, and they argue, we're just as good as you. And this leads to the demonstration of God, who God has chosen to be holy. And remember, the Korah and Dathan and Abiram have the experience of finding out what it's like to be swallowed up by the earth. Couldn't have been good. And God's judgment takes place on that. But upshot of this, the quick story, is that he shows who he has chosen to serve before him by having Aaron and other leaders of the people to bring a rod for each head of their father's household in chapter 17, and to deposit these rods before the testimony in the tent of meeting. And in the morning, the one that God had chosen to be holy before him, it would be seen with what happened to that rod. So what happens to the rod that Aaron leaves? All right, this in the morning, the next day, verse 8, the rod that Aaron has left for the house of Levi had sprouted and put forth buds and produced blossoms, and it had ripe almonds on it. Now, can you imagine what it'd be like to walk out there, these, I'll call them sticks, and one out of all of them, that would be a pretty impressive thing, wouldn't it? So God has this rod to be kept as a sign against any rebels in verse 10, so that everyone would know who was his, who he had chosen to serve him. All right, now that leads to the work and responsibilities of the priests and so forth, and ordinances for cleansing, chapters 18 and 19. Then in chapter 20, a chapter which begins with the death of Miriam and ends with the death of Aaron. Significant chapter because it has in between the people assembling themselves against Moses and Aaron because there was no water. And Moses and Aaron fall on their faces and they ask God why have you brought us out here into this wilderness, and why did you bring us out of Egypt to this wretched place, and so forth. Moses and Aaron fall before the Lord in verse 6, and the Lord speaks to Aaron, or to Moses, and he tells him to take the rod. Now, this is an important thing here. What rod? Not just the staff that Moses or Aaron has, but what rod? The one that bloomed, the one that was the testimony against the rebels, the one that showed who God regarded as holy, or that God would be counted as holy. And to take that and assemble the congregation around and speak to the rock before their eyes, and the rock would yield water. And how was a rock going to yield water? God was going to make it. Right. And that branch would say, the same God who can take a dead stick and make it bloom and sprout and bear almonds can bring water from the rock. All right. So the whole point of God is to illustrate His power and to impress on a generation of Israelites His holiness and His faithfulness and His ability. And Moses takes the rod and he gathers the people before the rock, and he says, "Listen now, you rebels." And he could have said, "This rod is the testimony against you and your complaining," but instead he did what? With that rod, he hit the rock twice, and he said what? That's right. So must we or shall we bring forth water for you out of this rock? And he strikes it twice. Now what happens as a result of that? All right, water, but... All right, why? Now, what I'm getting at here is I've run across people think this was so small of God to treat Moses this way after all this man had been through just because he got frustrated and hit a rock. He didn't get to go to the promised land. But folks, it's not just because of that. Look at verse 12. The Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "Because you have not believed me to treat me as holy in the sight of the sons of Israel." And you got to remember the situation. You shall not bring this assembly into the land that I've given you. And this becomes a thing that dominates the rest of Moses' experience and through the wilderness. So bear that in mind. In chapter 21, the people murmur again, and these fiery serpents come out, and Moses interceded for the people, verse 7 says. So that part of Moses' work doesn't change. Neither does Moses' work in trying to urge his people to be faithful to the Lord change, or any of the teaching response. Moses keeps on faithfully attending to all of that. We get all the way, and you remember, 38 years are going along here, and come over to the end of Deuteronomy now. And notice what happens here. Deuteronomy 31, verses 24 and following. Got that found? Deuteronomy 31 and 23. Moses commands or commissions Joshua and tells him to be strong and courageous. And Moses, verse 24, he wrote these words of this law in a book. And he lays this book of the law beside the covenant of the Lord in an effort to help them to remain faithful to the Lord. Now, in chapter 32, there is a song that Moses was to teach the people so that they would be able to remember their history. And then when you get to verse 48 of chapter 32, notice. The Lord spoke to Moses that very day, that very same day, "Go up to this mountain of the Abarim, Mount Nebo, which is in the land of Moab, opposite Jericho, across the on the east side of the Jordan, in other words, and look at the land of Canaan, which I'm giving to the sons of Israel for possession. Then die on the mountain where you ascend, and be gathered to your people, as Aaron your brother died on Mount Hor and was gathered to his people, because you broke faith with me in the midst of the sons of Israel at the waters of Meribah Kadesh in the wilderness of Zin, because you did not treat me as holy in the midst of the sons of Israel. For you shall see the land at a distance, but you shall not go there into the land which I'm giving the sons of Israel." All right. And we learn in chapter 34, this Moses, the servant of the Lord, this is what happens. And God buries him there, and no one knows the place of it. Now, I've told us that story to ask you to consider with me another prayer of Moses. And I believe set against this background helps us to appreciate this. Look at Psalm 90 now, if you would, please. Psalm 90 is an example of Moses' prayers for himself and his people that surely does look impressive against the background of all these years in the wilderness and a whole nation or whole generation dying off, including Moses, because of their unbelief in God, if I can say it that way. You've all heard Psalm 90 read, and sometimes you've heard it read by me. And this great passage, it has a power all its own. But if you look at it, knowing the other prayers of Moses, remember his prayers of intercession, his prayer of complaint, and now his prayer about his life and the lives of his people. I try to put this in my mind as Moses gets toward the end himself, and after all that he must have seen. How many funerals had he been to? 38 years. My goodness, you just think of that. His sister and his brother. And look at it. This prayer is a reflection on the human condition, a human experience. Its heart is verses 12 and 13. So teach us to number our days that we may present or we may have a heart of wisdom. Return, O Lord, how long? And be sorry for or show compassion or pity for your servants. That's the heart of the prayer. But it starts with a confession about who God is and about man's relation to God. Just look at it with me, obviously there's not a lot of time in our class tonight, but against the background, think of there is a place in our lives for prayer, not about an immediate problem, not about failings of people or our own complaints, but just prayer with God about life. And he says, Lord, you have been our dwelling place in all generations. Before the mountains were born or you gave birth to the earth and the world, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. Isn't that beautiful and real? God has been the only constant. And think about this with Moses. Pillar of fire, pillar of cloud, wilderness, people, enemies, people perishing, nations not letting the people pass through even. All the responsibility. And Moses says, from everlasting to everlasting, you're God. Now verse 3, and listen to this against the judgment of Numbers chapter 14. You turn man back into dust and say, return, O children of men. For 1,000 years in your sight are like yesterday when it passes by. Or as a watch in the night. A watch in the night is a 3-hour period in the night. You have swept them away like a flood. They fall asleep. In the morning, they're like grass which sprouts anew. In the morning, it flourishes and sprouts anew. And toward evening, it fades and withers away. Now look at the images there. Like yesterday, a watch in the night, a flood sweeps down a gully and is gone, or grass that springs up and then wilts and dies. Now that's the condition. What's the reason for it? And Moses identifies the reason for it as the presence of sin and death in the world because of God's necessary judgment against evil. For we, and this is 7 through 12, 7 through 11, let me do it that way. For we have been consumed by your anger, and by your wrath we have been dismayed. Now, hear that. Remember the generation falling in the wilderness? We've been consumed. We've been dismayed by your wrath, your just judgment against sin. You have placed our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your presence. For all our days, and the New American Standard uses the word, have declined in your fury. It's like we've been running down in God's judgment against us. We have finished our years like a sigh. Look at that's a life. For the days of our life, they contain 70 years, or if due to strength, 80 years. Yet is their pride but labor and sorrow, for it is soon gone, and we fly away. Who considers or who understands the power of your anger and your wrath, or as this version has the word fury, according to the fear that is due you? It's like Moses is saying, who knew that day when those spies came back and our people started talking about going back to Egypt, who knew how that would all turn out? And when I took that rod that was holy and treated it like it was a common switch to hit the rock with, who knew, who considered how that would look to you? And then there are the requests that come up here, and I'll just number them off quickly. They're depending on how you outline this, anywhere from 3 to 5, so I'll go with 5 things that are asked here. First, teach us to number our days that we may get us a heart of wisdom. Help, in other words, help us remember we're on a journey that has an ending in this world. Return, Lord, how long? And so, come back to us, be with us, help us, and then satisfy us in the morning with your love and kindness that we may sing for joy and be glad all our days. Then next, make us glad according to the days you have afflicted us and the years you've seen evil. Let your work appear to your servants and your majesty to their children. And then let the favor of the Lord our God be upon us and confirm or establish the work of our hands. Yes, establish the work of our hands, or give permanence to the work. Let there be something about what we've done with our lives at last. Can you identify with that prayer? Does 70 years seem like a sigh? It does when we look back at our lives, and you can see what Moses is saying. Lord, return, satisfy us, make us glad, show us favor, help us to see, establish or give permanence to what we've done with our lives. Everybody has a hunger for that permanence. We have to decide whether we're going to show it on a stone at a gravesite or in a prayer like this. I think the latter has a better chance, don't you, really? Help us to live for something that counts. All right, Moses was a man of prayer. I think that's obvious in looking at this, and I hope that this will be helpful to each one of us. You guys know, if you watch the news, what a tragedy happened in our country today in South Florida. Shooting at a high school, at least 17 people. There's nothing going to change this stuff unless evil can be gotten out of the hearts of people. And there's nothing that's going to do that unless people can be redeemed. And there's nothing that's going to do that but the gospel of Christ. So our work is important. And let's bear that in mind. Let's pray before we go tonight.